Welcome to the EcoSend podcast. Stories from marketers, founders, and changemakers leading businesses for a better world. Hi there, welcome to another episode of the EcoSend podcast. I'm your host, James, and for those of you new to the show, the EcoSend podcast is a weekly podcast where I talk to other inspiring leaders who are trying to make the world a little bit better in their own businesses. Every week we put out the show, we hope you like it, and we're always trying to make sure other people feel inspired, motivated, entertained, educated to make the world a little bit better in their own ways. So that's the show. And today's episode, I am thrilled to be joined by Julian. Julian is an advertising entrepreneur. Now, Julian helps slow brands reveal their wild side to become better than fast and furious brands. He runs an agency called Wild and Slow. And I'm really excited to dig in to how Julian is helping brands make the world a bit better, how the world of advertising can be a positive force for change. So, Julian, hi, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hi, James. I'm very happy to be here. I'm doing very great. We have a sunny weather this morning. I'm very glad to be with you right now.
Amazing. Where are you joining from, Julian? Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Right now, we are in the south of Nantes in France, in a city called Clisson, which is in the vineyard of Nantes and which is known internationally because we have some of the biggest festival in Europe here. It's called the Hellfest. So for the hard rock fans or metal music fans, extreme music fans, the city is full of them in the spring. And it's a great thing.
That's amazing. Are you a bit of a rocker yourself then, Julian? You've certainly got the beard for it.
Actually, yes. I'm a singer and guitar player.
Oh, amazing. That's a considerable amount more musical than I am, I must admit.
It sounds amazing. You don't play, James?
I played the piano a little bit when I was at school, but I other than one Coldplay song, I'm not very good.
That's good enough. That's good enough.
I really want to dive into your music career, but I think we want to talk about your journey into the world of sustainability, maybe the world of advertising as well. So you're now the founder, your CEO of an agency called Wild and Slow, and I mean, I've seen your work. It looks amazing. And how have you got to this point then, Julian? How are you? What's taken you down the path to running Wild and Slow? And why do you care about sustainability?
I think I was not born to be an entrepreneur. It came it came like that in my career. I think I was more born to be an entertainer. Which is in my blood since forever. But it's true that when I started my career after business school, I went into advertising in order to do entertainment, because right. This is a job that can be very entertaining. We create ads, we play with concepts and so on.
We've all seen Mad Men, I guess. Yeah, we've all seen Mad Men. It looks pretty... I doubt the profession's changed much since the 1950s, right?
Yes, it has changed a little bit. because I've seen the whole show and my job is to create entertainment, not to entertain my client into parties and so on, not like in Mad Men. It's true that this work has always been... The moral in Mad Men is a good transition because there is an issue of morality in this job, which is like trying to entertain at any price, any cost. And I had my disappointments in my career also when I started to be really aware of what we are doing with those ads, what we are doing with this job. And especially when more and more people around me, when they ask me, what do you do as a job? I say, I do advertising. And it doesn't make anybody dream around me at that time, because advertising, oh, wow, you are creating lies, you are a liar, you are creating needs that don't exist first, and so on. And in a way, they are right. In a way, they are right, especially in a time where advertising is more and more boring also. And in another way, my own personal environmental consciousness developed, and I think I'm not ready to do advertising for everything. And it's been a while that I was not ready to advertise anything. I don't think it's a good thing for the planet to advertise pesticide, to advertise all product, to advertise meat, to advertise alcohol, to advertise anything that is controversial or polluting. Because when we do that, we create a confusing environment, especially with greenwashing nowadays, making people believe that this is kind of acceptable, this kind of product. And it's actually a big issue for if we want to change, because when we create confusion, we make the most polluting companies also the most successful companies. And we would help them to make people believe that they actually care or making efforts while they are not. And when I was more aware of this, I had no choice but to become my own boss, because when I started to refuse clients when I was an employee, of course it was not, what? No, you don't choose a client, you just fucking
that
do it.
That didn't go down well.
And I created first another company where I was co-CEO, and I didn't have so many shares. I was the small business owner, and it was not enough, so I had to create my own company and found Wild & Slow. And since that, I could really develop the vision of what is a sustainable company in advertising, because what was a seed a few years ago became something more realist, and something that I have managed to develop intellectually and also operationally.
There's so much to unpack there, Julian. I think it's fascinating hearing your story. I mean, something that often on this podcast I hear a lot of like, people need to put their neck on the line. They need to stick themselves out and make controversial decisions sometimes in business. It's not always a win-win for everyone. And for you to go as far as to basically start your own agency to truly build the agency you want to build, it's it shows a real dedication and passion for this, which I think is beyond what a lot of people would be comfortable doing. You know, everyone, when you talk to a lot of people when they're starting a business, the idea of saying no to work is very difficult. You know, people need to make sure they're bringing in revenue, bringing in clients. So how did you get to a point where you were comfortable to do that? And was there any points where that became incredibly difficult? Have you ever been tempted to sort of say yes to a tobacco company or a huge fossil fuel company if the price was right? Like, there must have been some difficult decisions there, or conversations at least.
Yes and no. Well, anyway, in any business, there is always a temptation, but not only for what you're talking about. There is temptation for corruption. There is temptation for hiring the son of a client. There is all of those things have been proposed to be bought out after 3 months of starting my own agency. And while I was in insecurity, because, you know, when you start, you don't know if you're going to make a revenue out of it. So temptations, they come all the time. And after a while, you build a stronger mindset to also have some consistency. You know, you don't flow with the wind, you don't fly with the wind. Anytime there is something out of your way coming and trying to change your way. So about those, what you're talking about is one of the first decision I took when I created Wild and Slow was to define what does it mean to have a sustainable advertising company. And at that time, it was only 3 years ago, sustainable meant, when I looked around me, having a compost or giving extra money to employees or whatever. So decisions that would take 100 euros, not decisions that would take that would cost more. And I didn't agree with that because, as I said before, to me, a sustainable advertising company is a lot about it's about much more than having a compost and so on. Those things are totally obvious. It's about what are you advertising? So who are you working for and what kind of message do you put on air? And so I figured out a method to decide what kind of advertising we're going to do. It's actually a British methodology. It's called Client Disclosure Report. And it was created by a collective of agency in Great Britain. The website is called Creative and Climate. And they have signed a commitment, which is we will commit to be transparent about our turnover, and we will share how much money we do on the most controversial and polluting sector. And I went a little bit further, so I have this transparency. Plus, on my website, there is a list of which sector we don't want to work for. So basically, if you're in that sector, you're not welcome, and which sector we want to work for. Once this is done, this is such a good tool to not get out of our way because we have written it since day one.
Committed, yeah.
If we decide to work for an oil company just because it's practical in terms of money, people in our community, they will be betrayed and they will not understand. So to us, it's a matter of survival now to not betray our community because I'd rather close my company right now if I would betray those commitments that are still written and that are updated every year. So
that's amazing.
And they are written not in such a stupid or naive way. You know, we have really thought about it. For example, I tell to you all company. This is a very generic thing, but we have written something like companies that do more than 10% of their turnover with oil. So we don't exclude companies that are, let's say, they do 90% of wind energy, but they still have an old leftover of oil thing. And it's not at all the same philosophy as those who do 90% of oil and are trying to make us believe they are sustainable, while all the sustainable businesses are just here to promote the oil business or to be a little change. It's not
enough. That's actually, yeah, I love that, Julian. I think there's something to take away there, like just in business in general, like the idea of holding yourself accountable and finding ways to, you know, to hold yourself true to what you promise and to have that written down, to have that publicly shared, to be doing that with your peers. I'm just so inspired by that. I think it's I mean, whatever business people are in or company they're running, like there's probably opportunities to take something from that to help themselves stay accountable to these. When, you know, we all know how difficult sometimes those decisions can be when the money is being dangled or the possible contract is tempting someone, especially, you know, in at least in the UK and I think a lot of the world right now, there's a lot of businesses really struggling and really struggling to make ends meet. So when it comes to survival as a business, it can be, I think, incredibly difficult for some businesses.
Well, if I may say, this kind of commitment, it also creates trust. And in my business, when I was telling you, you are all liars because you're advertisers, this business needs also trust. And this is also this kind of decision that recreates trust, that you are not just today it's environment, tomorrow it's going to be something else, you don't care, I don't trust you. It creates trust. And so, of course, we have refused some potential collaborations, but also we have gained so much. Like, we have always to put in perspective what we lose and what we gain. With that trust we have gained, and I think I told you in the pre-brief of this recording that I never had to use my phone to do cold hunting, to do cold calls, because with that trust and with that thing, the word of mouth works well, and also people find us generally. We are not looking for clients. The clients, they come to us directly.
While that's we refuse a pretty clients. Good situation. Yeah, so that's pretty good. Yeah, sorry, Julie.
It's a lot of work. We have to work our SEO visibility. It doesn't come like just we took the decision. It comes, but still, it participates to create trust, and it's participate to be profitable. Sometimes we have clients to say we only work with companies that are committed in terms of environment, in terms of good social condition, and so on. We have made a public tender, for example, and among all the companies, it's true that there is a big difference with yours, and we trust it more because you took real decisions and so on.
Yeah.
So it shows also.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much we could talk about on this topic alone, Julian, but I'm conscious. I know there's many other things we wanted to talk about. So I'm truly very inspired by what you've been sharing there of how you've been building Wild and Slow. It's incredible. One of the topics you wanted to talk about, which maybe overlaps with a lot of what we've been talking about there, but asking the question, we all talk about sustainable companies, sustainable services, but what to you is a sustainable service? Like, how do you think about that?
What to me is a sustainable service? And I wanted to talk about it.
Well, I know you were talking about when we were speaking before, you were talking about your scope 1 and 2 calculations and how, you know, your impact. I guess there's a lot of overlap with what we've just been talking about, but how to think about that as a business, and again, like, some of those difficult decisions that come into that.
Yes. So in my business, there are three ways to be sustainable. It's first our own impact, how much kilometers we do, plane, food, and so on. Then there is what we do also for our clients. Do we design our services in a eco-friendly way? Which we have expertise for this, by the way. We do brand design, we do eco brand design, let's say, with less ink, websites with less conceptions, and so on. But it's true that there is an official calculation of carbon impact with three scopes: scope 1, scope 2, scope 3. We have made it for this year. Our impact is 1/3 of the average of our sector. We do. We create 3 tons of carbon per year per collaborator, while the average is 8.5. And it's amazing what it shows also, because it shows that 98% of our impact is what they call scope 3 in this. Scope 3 only includes, in what we calculate, is with our providers. So what I was telling you, which is, let's say, society impact, which is creating advertising for polluting companies, has really a bad impact on the society. It's not even calculated. And already 98% of our impact is caused by what we buy to our providers. That's why I say a compost, less kilometers, and so on, it's very good. These are basic decisions. But this is 2% of the impact of a company. So really consider the rest is because it's easy to calculate the kilometers, the electricity. It's very easy to calculate. So people, they over focus on it. They tend sometimes to overvalue it, especially because those methodologies, they are old. So they are usually a list of things. We are great because we do this, that, that, and that. But now, with more modern methodologies, we calculate and we know that decision one doesn't have the same impact at all as decision two. And it helps so much people to prioritize, you know, to figure, to go from what I do what I can, I do those little decisions that make a difference, to I am doing the right decisions that have the most impact on my company and on the environment. And so I feel that what I'm doing, it's important because I know it's been calculated. It's a big difference. And it gives courage also, because when you know where is your priority, it empowers you. You know, you know that what you're doing has a really strong impact. And it gets you out also of those conversations that are bringing you down, which is, yeah, you do this, but it is compensated by this bad action or this, like, you go out of the debate with those rational calculations.
This is fascinating. I know if I rewind like a year, I wasn't too familiar with the concept of scope 1, 2, 3 for carbon calculations. I would imagine many people listening are perhaps not too sure about that themselves, but to clarify, the scope 3 emissions, I keep hearing from a lot of businesses like 90-95% of their emissions are scope 3 emissions. And so for you, Julian, with Wild and Slow, what is the scope 3 emissions? Is that the people that are buying the products that you're helping to promote? Is it the campaigns you run and what the actions are that come off the back of that?
It's a bit complex because scope 3 is new concepts in scope 3 coming out these days. Scope 3 is your indirect carbon emissions. They have been provoked by your business, but they are not inside exactly your business. So it's the big majority, and this is, for example, your provider. For example, you bought a chair, and to build this chair, the provider had to use water, use raw materials, and so on. This is scope 3. But when I say this is quite concrete already. And there is a new scope 3 that we are talking. I call it the extended scope 3, which is maybe to do this chair, some people had to be killed, or maybe to do this chair, I see your face, but to produce some clothes, some children have to be reduced to slavery, you know? And so this is serious, this scope 3, you know, and this is the most hidden part. And if I do an advertising campaign for a meat, then it will create a climate where people will want to consume more meat, while it's some of the most polluting food industry. Not to talk about the condition of the animals and so on. I'm not saying like we should not eat meat. I am not against meat and so on. I'm not against alcohol in general and so on. But over promoting alcohol, over promoting meat, or even promoting those products, this is not my cup of tea, because for alcohol, we know the issues. In some countries, it's even forbidden to promote alcohol. And to promote meat, it has an impact on the society. And this is very, very hard to calculate.
Absolutely. It's incredibly difficult, but also clearly where so much of that true impact is, right? It's so how, I guess then, Julian, like how do you promote sustainable product. How do you promote sustainable companies, and how do you approach that and give the more sustainable alternative a good shot at being considered in by consumers?
So as I told you, I'm an entertainer.
And my vision... I can see that. I can hear that too.
My vision about this is emotional and around entertainment. I think the issues with sustainable brands is that they are boring and they are a bit too much about moral. And what I advise my clients is to put the moral argument, we are sustainable and so on a second layer, not as a first layer. Why? Because, for example, if you look at France, the organic industry is going very bad. Shops are closing and so on because it's expensive also, but also because it's boring as fuck. I don't know. I don't know any bio brand. I don't know. Sorry for my language. I don't know any bio brand that
I'll allow it this time.
I don't know any organic brand that has been as entertaining as McDonald's or any non-organic brands. And they think advertising is dirty. Oh la la, advertising is for McDonald's and so on, not for us. But they don't take the risk to be liked or to be loved by people. They only are on a rational level. I mean, I'm doing a bit of a caricature here, but it's really the issue because people, they choose with their heart, they don't choose with their brain. Our cognitive activity is essentially emotional. You can read about this, the Nobel Prizes of the 21st century, Daniel Kahneman, Richard Taylor. They are all about behavioral economics, and they are all helping us to own that we are emotional behaviors and that the rational consumer, he exists, of course. We all have a brain. We all are able to do it. But when we are, but we don't do it all of the time during all of the day. When we are shopping hungry, we buy something that is satisfying. We are every day when we are shopping, we are not comparing everything. We are just buying with our habits, with our dopamine, with our insula, and so on. So we need to reconsider that we are emotional beings, and we have to catch those emotional brain even for sustainable products and sustainable services. So I have a sentence in French. I will try to translate in English, but don't let the monopoly of coolness to the irresponsible ones. Don't leave the monopoly of coolness to the irresponsible ones. Sustainable brands, they have to be cool as well. For example, one of the best advertising I know for secondhand clothing is that song from Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, which is Thrift Shop, I think.
Yes.
I'm going to have some fun because I have $20 in my pocket. This video, this clip, it's been seen billion times, and they are talking about Flea Shop, and it's cool. They are singing, they are doing music about it. This is how we want to talk about this, because it makes you want to do it, not something like, you know, the industry of clothing is very polluting. in order to less pollute, you need to buy less clothes and look like shit. No, you cannot do this, because with this with this kind of moralization, people, the same year, for example, as fashion brands have been accused to make some people of China work in kind of slavery conditions. The same years, they made the highest profits. It didn't touch anything in their profits because the brand still managed to be cool, and the other brands that are sustainable that don't do this, we don't know who they are. They don't appear and so on. So, if you want to take the place of those cool brands, take your risk. Have some fun and tell people it's going to be all right and fun. Don't tell them it's going to be boring and so on.
You're so right, Julian. I I am incredibly entertained by this, but also incredibly inspired by your thinking here. It's when you put it like that, it seems so obvious. And you're right. I'm struggling to think of great brands that truly stand up for these values. And it's easy to list off the vast majority of all of the incredible brands that have been built in the 20th century, in particular, that do not put sustainability or the planet or people very high on their agenda. I'm conscious we've already gone through a half hour. I kind of don't want this episode to end. I do want to just make sure we cover off one final topic, which hopefully I'm sure you'll have something to share on this, Julian. But the future, what does business look like? What does marketing and business look like in the near future, or whenever, over the next few years? What's gonna change? What's gonna stay the same?
The future of marketing, I think. Well, I think there will be IA, more IA. So, no, AI. Sorry, AI in
I
English.
mean, IA might also come along, you know. I don't know what I want to see with AI in reverse.
I mean, artificial intelligence will be
I
more
knew.
implemented in our field, of course, because it has also its qualities. And it will put a different level on what humans will bring. It's interesting that there is this artificial intelligence revolution right now, because what do we do as humans, as advertiser, now that there is a lot of possibility to automatize something? And I think it will higher the level in terms of the ability to give good advice, giving good advice, which is good advice, it means moral advice, efficient advice, and to conceptualize stories that are deep, honest, and creative. And I think it's not easy to do the three at the same time, you know, to do something which is deep, that touches to the guts, you know. Honest and creative. And I think that in my field, the value of honesty and trust will really rise, because what can we trust when some of the things are made with machines, when so many brands are lying or exaggerating, when there is generally a moral issue in that business? I think that the honesty and the way to face the modern challenges will be the key, you know, integrity. You know, I started in this business. I was working like a slave, basically working for almost zero money and 1,300 euros net, I remember, from very often until midnight. This business was, you know, made like this. In order to work in this creative business, you had to work hard without counting your hours and so on. And I think this cannot last. So there are so many revolutions of that are human, that are technologic, and that are moral, that will be key to the future of this business.
That is actually quite an uplifting viewpoint of the future, Julian. I appreciate that. I'm glad we're ending on something to not fear too much, I think. I appreciate that. I know you also wanted to mention a couple of books that have been very influential for you that might be of interest to others. What were those books, Julian?
Well, I would say the most influential for me, I always quote them. I like Dan Ariely, which is it, her, his book is called Predictably Irrational, and I understood a lot about how our brain works. And if you want to convince it, and this book is useful to negotiate your salary, as to know what present to bring to a friend when you are invited, as for marketing strategies, you know. There is a lot of emotional concepts that are very interesting as a anchor value, for example. When I talk about salary, the first one who talks puts a value on the table, and everything will be around this. So if you put 2,000 on the table and I wanted 4, it's not possible. There won't be any negotiation. It's more or less 20% from the first value, you know. So it's very important, this first value. And it's important not only in a salary negotiation, but in many things. So I like this book, and I think I told you also a bit earlier about Daniel Kahneman, who wrote Thinking Fast and Slow in 2002. He was Nobel Prize of Economy. And it's the same. It's about how our brain works. And on a personal level, I was always a lot into my studies when I was young. And I was always thinking that my brain will be... my brain is fantastic and it will bring success in my life. And but there was something missing in my life, which was my emotional animal part that I didn't let express or accept. And I think people are happier with their emotional and animal part. And when I got to own it, explore it, give it more value, I became more happy and more satisfied. So it's not
incredible.
We are overvaluing the brain, and in our society, we are very mental, very, very mental, and we forget to be back to put positivity on our emotions.
I love both of those books, Julian. I know
you know them.
I remember reading Predictably Irrational a long time ago, and finding it far, far more inspiring and influential than any economics class I took at school. And I can't say enough good things about that. And yeah, they're both fantastic books. Thank you so much for recommending them. We'll definitely link to those in the notes. Julian, I want to talk to you all day, but I've got to wrap up the show, I'm afraid. So I am sure there are many people listening or watching that would love to hear more of you, maybe even work with you. I can see you've got some links here. I think in our default template, we put a Twitter thing in, and you've put never next to that, which I love. but you are on LinkedIn, and you have a fantastic and beautiful website.
Thank you.
The website is Wild and Slow, and dot agency if you're English, but if you're French, there's a dot fr, which is great. So Julian, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolutely wonderful, inspiring, and incredibly entertaining episode. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me, James. I hope my English was all right, and it was really I really had great time with you. You are really uplifting, James.
You're too kind. Too kind. Julian, we're going to have to play out this episode to Thrift Shop, I think. So I'll see if we can do that. I don't know if we can get the licensing, but thank you, Julian. Thank you, everyone, for if you've been listening or watching, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate everyone who listens and watches to the show. And if you've enjoyed this, please do tell your friends, family, colleagues, loved ones about this, and spread the word. And we'll catch you next time.